Welcome to the nara.org.au podcast. I'm your host, Baron Hansen, and we are recording live at Triple U Studios in Nara CBD. What is the nara.org.au podcast? It is a series and collection of stories of the people and characters who make up the fabric of this town of Nara. Today, our guest is Avalon Bourne. Avalon is the CEO and founder of Sonder Youth. Their mission is to improve youth mental health through positive action. They inspire youth to create positive change to their mental well-being. They provide young people with the tools, knowledge, experience, and confidence to be agents of positive change in their community. They create a ripple effect throughout the community, and their values are kindness, hope, and doing the thing. Core principles include focus on prevention, empowerment, promoting self-efficacy, resilience, social connection, and community connection. In 2024, they won the New South Wales Youth Work Awards, Outstanding Youth Participation Winner. And in 2025, Avalon was awarded the Churchill Fellowship, which we'll talk about at some point during this conversation. Welcome, Avalon. How are you doing?
Hi, really good. How are you?
Good. It's good to see you. And a little personal story, I guess. You knew my mum growing up. My mum was a school teacher at Illawarra Road Public School. Shout out to mum. I know you're a big listener of the podcast. When I was living in New York, I remember her sending me some of the stuff with Sonder and what you were doing. She's like, look at this like cool stuff that's happening in Nara. And I know, like, secretly my mum's like mission was to get me back to Nara. she would keep sending me like cool stuff that was happening, but she was very proud of like seeing, you starting Sonder and the cool stuff you were doing with youth. And that was over 10 years ago, right?
Sonder's nearly nine.
So, okay. Yeah.
Nearly a decade.
Yeah. So she's sending me that. So I've kind of like been following your journey from the start via mum. Mm.
Well, thank you, Leanne.
Yeah.
She did a good job bringing you home.
And so it's really cool to be here kind of, speaking with you and, just catching up on all the wonderful things you're doing. I think like we share the same mission, is that we want this place to be better, and you're really attacking it from a youth perspective. And not only what I'm doing at Be Here Nara, but nara.org.au is really about that and making Nara a better place and making it better for everybody who lives here as well. So yeah, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for that bio.
So easy. It's easier for me to read someone else's bio than you to tell us all the
good
stuff.
It's always awkward to sit through that.
Yeah. No, it was great. So the first question we ask everybody, what's the most underrated thing about Nara that people always get wrong?
It's an interesting question, and not knowing what your other guests have said yet, I don't want to repeat. But the thing that comes to mind for me is the natural environment around here. I think we have a big stereotype in Nara and a big reputation that precedes us in a lot of other areas, but people don't often take the time to stop here and explore everything that's going on in and around Nara. You know, like, we have Jervis Bay right there that people just fly straight by to get to, and Kangaroo Valley, but Nara is really beautiful and historic, and there's so much rich history to this town, pre-colonial history, obviously. I think it's really underrated and more people could explore here.
Yeah, totally. And I think, like, don't worry about answering questions the same as others. You know, you're coming at it from your perspective, but what I've really loved about this podcast is that hearing what's the same and what is different. And, you know, we have had some answers that are the same, and then some that really just take things in another direction. But it's interesting to see what continually comes up. And
is
nature,
that a common theme?
Nature is one of the key themes that's starting to come through, and it's a really good reminder as we do this project, nara.org.au, this is helpful, like, for us as we help to promote Nara, you know, those kind of answers. If that continues to come up, it's like, yes, of course, we need to continue to promote and share things like the natural beauty. So thank you. How did you end up in Nara? What's your earliest memory of this town?
So I actually grew up for the first decade or so of my life on Wiradjuri country in Tumut, which is just north of the Snowy Mountains, a tiny little town. And so when my brother and I were getting towards being teenagers, my parents wanted us to have just more opportunities than a small town, regional town like that could afford us. So they got transfers to work here to TAFE. And yeah, we started going to Uluru and then Nowra High School. And my first memory, I don't have a specific memory, but I remember feeling like Nowra was big. Like there were shops here, like a lot of shops. And for, you know, early adolescent, there were more than one clothing store. Was just bonkers. That was just, it was like a city. And I had been used to the kind of place that you would walk down the street and really know everyone. You'd have a connection to everyone in some way. So it was new here to have so many opportunities to meet new people. Because Nowra was really, and still is, a hub. You know, we'd connect with people from Sussex and Ulladulla and Kiama and Gerringong, all coming to the same place for things like sports or school camp or whatever. So I was always really overwhelmed but excited by how many people there were.
Yeah, so you've come to the big smoke from
Tumut
to
Nowra. Like, yeah. Yeah.
And then how has it kind of Nowra changed over the last 25 years, or how have you seen it change?
Yeah, it's a tricky question because I think I've changed a lot in that time, obviously. And so my perspective on what's going on here has shifted. And I've always been a part of particular facets of society. Being a teenager, you experience one side of Nowra to being an adult or a parent. So my experience was that when I was growing up here, there was not a lot going on. I came up, I think, just after the age of the Tea Club, when all those gigs were happening. I remember the older kids talking about that, and it wasn't really happening when we were coming up. I don't know what the cause of that was when I was young, but there seemed to be a drop in my teenage years and early 20s in how much activity there was. And now, I mean, in the last 5-10 years, it feels like there's just been a new wave come through, people with energy for this town, and events happening a lot, and music happening a lot of cultural sharing that I was definitely not aware of or a part of when I was a teenager. So I think there was almost a dip in my experience of how much energy there was for this town.
Mm. What was teenager Avalon like at high school?
That's potentially embarrassing. I mean, I was very social and I loved people. I was kind of loved to get to know everyone, but I was very ambitious. I was, you know, school oriented and goals driven, and I always wanted to keep doing the next interesting thing. And a lot of that took me away from Nowra, to be honest. Like this wasn't the hub that I had thought it was when I first moved here. So there's a lot of Wollongong and Sydney traveling that happened. But yeah, I think I would have enjoyed if there were some more things available to me as a teenager in this town.
Yeah. I know you were like things like leadership, or what kind of things were you going away for? What kind of things were you doing in high school?
Leadership was the big thing. I was an SRC kid. Yep. But it felt to me at the time that there were kind of two tracks. You were either a sports kid or a leadership kid. They were the two opportunities. And I mean, I did sports as well, but like soccer. And I wasn't a Matilda or anything, so I didn't get to travel so much with it. And leadership felt like the opportunity to get me places.
Yeah. And so when did Sonder Youth, when did that idea first kind of enter your realm? Or, yeah, what's the genesis story of how Sonder started? Yeah.
Well, after school, I came and went for a number of years, like 6 or 7 years. I did an undergrad in international relations. And at the same time, I was doing just a lot of travel to different internships and programs overseas. So I was having this real contrasted education where at uni I was learning a lot about top-down processes and systems thinking and hierarchical social change. Mm-hmm. Whereas in my internships and work, I was connecting with communities where it was community-led, and often it started with one person who had stepped up and wanted to create change around a particular thing, and they did. And my perspective was that that approach often had much more intentional and impactful consequences than the top-down approach that comes from a lot of hierarchies and systems. Mm. So when I came back kind of full time, I was really taken with that idea of what it means to be the person that steps up and does the thing. It's a company value now.
Yeah.
And the thing is so non-specific. It's just whatever the thing is that needs changing in your sphere. I think it takes a particular perspective and sense of your own ability to step up and do that. And over the years, we've just seen time and again the ripple effect of someone deciding to do that thing, whether it's for themselves or someone else or the broader community. The results are just phenomenal. And that's really where it started, was wanting to see more of that in my community, where I had grown up feeling like this was not the place that things happened or change happened.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you touched on a really important point that I truly believe in as well, is that like a lot of people spend so much time trying to change that hierarchical, that like top-down approach. And what that top approach is, it's always the collective consciousness. It's like what everybody's opinions and lives and how they live makes that hierarchical kind of structure. And what we actually need to change is we need to change the bottom, you know, that grassroots stuff, which is precisely why I love what you guys do. And it's what I do as well, is that, you know, if we can change that bottom, well, if we change enough people at the bottom, then it's going to have the effect on things like our politics and things like the way that systems are designed, because the people are going to demand
exactly
the change. Yeah. And I think like what you guys do at Sonder is you attack that at the early stage, you know, we get getting to the youth, which is the so important, because they are the future in the making.
Yeah.
But I would like you to just talk a little bit about some of the programs or some of the ways in which Sonder is taking that grassroots approach.
So our flagship program is our Changemakers program, and it's really in the name, but we work with a group of young people for 6 months. Around 10 young people. We don't like to have too many people in the space, because what we get to create in that group over 6 months is something incredible. To have a safe container where a group of teenagers are able to share and be authentic and be supported to explore very challenging ideas sometimes, both about themselves and the broader society they're existing in. They're able to ask questions that they aren't generally able to ask in an average school environment and sometimes in a home life. They're able to connect on a level that is far deeper than and just a social interaction, and understand each other's stories and experiences. The change that can happen for them in a six-month experience like that is huge. And the journey for them is not just about that self-exploration, it's about creating a project for change in their community. So over the 6 months, they create anywhere between 1 and 3 projects that are entirely designed by them, and they have complete autonomy over what direction and it takes and what shape it manifests in. And we've had over the years, it's like, 40 or 50 projects that are youth driven that have done something positive for the community. And the effect of that is really interesting in community, to see the perspective of young people shift, that they're not disengaged, they're not problematic, they're not all of these words that get thrown at young people all the time. But they are really passionate and they care. And if you give them an opportunity, they're likely to step up. You just have to support them to do that.
Mm.
And the experience for them, seeing an idea come to fruition and impact the people around them, that can be game changing for a lot of them, especially for young people who maybe haven't had someone believe in them before.
Totally. Do you have any examples of some of those projects that have had impact, or of, you've really seen big transformation through some of the individuals? I know there's probably, you've got 50 favorites, but like, do you have any worth sharing?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few. One of my favorites, I feel like I talk about this one all the time, is the Flip Off challenge.
Amazing. Yeah. Can you share? Yeah. Yeah.
So this was pre anything to do with the social media ban. So maybe 3 years ago, we had a group who had a conversation in one of our weekly sessions about the relationship young people have with their phones and their peers, and they wanted to shift that. And so they self-selected to give up their smartphones for a flip phone for 2 weeks and see the difference it had in their own lives and document that. So they were doing video journals and written journals, and we were doing interviews with them throughout to kind of measure that difference. But one of the most interesting parts of that project for me was watching them navigate a flip phone for the first time, because they are not the generation who came up with a flip phone. They had no idea that you had to press the number 3 times to get to the right letter. Like, texting was, we had one young person tried to send a text that said hello, and she managed to turn off the phone. None of us knew even now how she did it. But it just evolved into so much more than any of us could have anticipated, because it was a great connector. We had some of those young people connecting with their grandparents who were able to help them use the flip phone, because it was, you know, it's generational, this connection with technology and how it's changed. And it was really a subversion for them, because their experience was generally that they have to teach their grandparent how to access the internet. And so to have that transition for them was really, really interesting to watch, and rewarding for, like, at a broader level, for people to see young people engaging in that way. And we saw really major impacts. I mean, if anyone listening, I recommend getting a flip phone for 2 weeks and just see how it goes, because the impact on their sleep was major.
Wow, yeah.
They had no, you know, we tracked their sleep scores pre and post, and their obviously screen time pre and then a couple of weeks post. And we did have young people in that group who were going to bed at like 2 or 3 in the morning and then getting up and going to school because they had a screen, they had access to that. And without that, they slept. You know, I'm not saying to any parents out there, just strip your child of their phone, but yeah, there are definitely benefits to that that are well documented. But I loved about this project that it was youth driven.
Yeah,
it was their solution to a problem they had noticed with their peers. They self-selected, and there has been a legitimate ripple effect that nearly every group since then has taken on the flip off challenge. We incorporate that now as part of a lot of our programs.
In change makers.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And people had their parents doing it. We still have all of the phones, so we often have people approach us to take it on just to try.
So cool.
Yeah. But that was a really cool one. Yeah.
Any others? Is it great?
Yeah. There's another, I mean, there's so many that I love. I think the ones that I love the most are the ones that are unexpected. So we have one actually called For Me, For You, that was created by a group who were very aware of what they called the therapy friend. So the friend of someone who is experiencing, you know, a mental health problem or a mental health crisis in a lot of cases. They had a big conversation about how hard it is to be the friend supporting someone going through that, and how sometimes there's not a lot of support for that friend. And there was a session that we had where that concept of a therapy friend came up, and we asked, you know, who here has been that friend, and every single hand came up. You know, we've had a youth mental health crisis. It's just so, so common for young people to be having these incredibly heavy, challenging conversations with concepts that are really, really hard for anyone to navigate, but they're doing it in adolescence with a friend without a lot of support. So what I loved about their solution was that they created a project called For Me, For You, where you could order these kind of support packs for both the, quote, therapy friend and the friend experiencing the mental health problem, so that it was not just the friend going through the crisis that got support, but both friends, and it was something they could connect over and share. And it really named the gap that I, until that point, had not really witnessed in our industry, which, you know, mental health industry, which is how important it is to support the friend. Mm. And we often see, you know, in a lot of young people's mental health journeys, while one friend might get better, the weight of carrying that for another friend is so often overlooked and not talked about. And this project was started maybe 2 years ago, And one of those participants then came to Parliament with us to talk about this project, and she's now running it independently and is creating it as a not-for-profit.
Cool.
Yeah. So it's still going, and she's still making it available to schools across the area.
Wow.
Yeah.
So cool. Yeah. And I think that ripple effect, like whether it's the project that they do there or just the simply the belief in themselves that they can do projects like that, like in 50 years time when you look back, you know, there's going to be some incredible things that come out of the change makers.
So yeah, exactly.
That's so exciting. You kind of like have your finger on the pulse with youth issues because you spend so much time immersed in youth and it's probably why you look so young and healthy.
Tell them that.
That, you know, but and we've talked about social media, we've talked about mental health, but like, yeah, talk us through just some of the challenges of being a youth today. You know, I'm assuming youth is high school, like that's what we're talking about, right?
Yeah, we generally, I mean, youth for a lot of the industry, it's 12 to 25.
Yeah. Okay, to 25, yeah.
Generally, we will, when we're talking about youth at Sonder, we talk about high school age, so kind of 12 to 18, but all of our program leaders and volunteers are that 18 to 25 range too. So, yeah, I get to connect with everyone in that category. Mm. So some of the biggest challenges.
Yeah, yeah. What it, like, talk us through, like, what are some of the challenges you're hearing from in the field, I guess?
Yeah, it's pretty bleak. and I will follow this with some more hopeful conversation too, but the Churchill Fellowship that you mentioned was looking really heavily at climate anxiety, which for me came off the back of the Black Summer, because we worked through that summer and all of the rigmarole that came afterwards with young people. And we saw the real rise in climate anxiety off the back of that. How could you not? I think a lot of our community experienced that. But more recently, what I'm starting to notice is climate anxiety is not so much the term that we're talking about anymore. It's future anxiety, because of things like, you know, social media is one, but I mean, AI, I hate to just throw it out there because everyone hates talking about it, but
I love talking about it.
Okay, great. Maybe it's just young people that don't like talking about it. Mm. Yeah, but there's just more than I've ever experienced in my time in this work. There's so much uncertainty when contemplating the future. There's no roadmap anymore. There's no even role models. Like, the world that young people's parents lived through doesn't exist anymore. So they have no signposts for where to go and what to do, what kind of career to have, what kind of home to have, what future to imagine for themselves. It's very hard to picture a future as a young person. Honestly, for all of us, probably. But especially a young person considering post-school options, like, do you go to uni and take on an enormous hex debt knowing that that will impact your ability to get a home loan in an industry that is not supporting you to get into housing at all? I had a young person just in the last couple of weeks share with me that she was questioning if she would ever be able to own a home. And she was really upset about it. That was something that she had seen her parents do. And for her, it means security in the world, and to imagine that she would never have that is really disconcerting. And it's not just a future faraway thing. This is their whole lives that are kind of in question these days. And AI is really impacting that too. Like, we've just had conversations about how much AI is transforming industries at such a phenomenal rate. It's hard to know if you enter a university degree now, if there will be jobs in that industry in 3 to 4 years' time when you graduate. And yet young people are still being pressured to make these decisions. Schools are still pushing them towards post-high school studies. Parents are often still pushing towards that. It's a lot of pressure for a young person to try and navigate a pathway with, you know, and climate still comes into that. Hmm. It's definitely not. It's not taken a back seat. There's still obviously a lot of fear about what the future will look like in a climate crisis.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked how you reframed that to just be more collective future anxiety, because obviously that climate is part of that, and, you know, we so many people on this podcast have mentioned the impact of the bushfires that either had on they it was either a catalyst for change or a catalyst for them being more sustainable, or even me, it was a catalyst for me moving back here and starting meditation teaching here. And now to see that that is actually growing into something quite bigger is like, what does the future look like? You know, because I think even in our parents' generation, the environment was more likely going to be there, right? Like, and that's, you know, you know what it's going to look like in 50 to 100 years. And so to take that into then the landscape of jobs and then the landscape of owning a house is, it's a lot. So what's the hopeful parts?
I actually feel like hope is the conversation I'm having most frequently lately. Everyone is either asking or talking about how to have hope. It's so hard. I mean, there's so many different ways to come at this. But what I find hope in all the time, and what we talk to our young people about, is to look at how many people are trying. Whatever it is, do the thing, whatever the thing is. There are so many of us who are still fighting for something and supporting each other, and it's everywhere. And we live with this kind of media discourse that is so negative and threatening and disempowering. And the challenge for us all is to look at what else there is. This is a conversation we have a lot. It's not about ignoring all of the things that are coming, all of the things that are challenging and hard right now. It's about looking at them and asking what else is there, and actively looking for that, because it is harder to find. It definitely is less clickbaity. So there's the social media challenge of that, but there's a lot of hope when you look at the people on the ground doing the thing and the ripple effect of change that we're all having.
Yeah. And when I saw Do the Thing on your website, what brought up for me was that this idea of the process is the outcome. You know, I think when we look at climate change, when we look at AI, when we look at owning a home, it seems like such a huge challenge. You know, like, we're not going to fix climate change on our own. We're not going to fix AI. It's unstoppable. You know, owning a home takes a lot of steps forward, and actually the only one thing we can do is do the thing. And in that, you know, instead of being focused on the outcome, like, I want to fix climate change, it's like, what can I do today? You know, what is that thing? And so that really resonated with me. And I think that's when we talk about future anxiety, it's thinking about the future, right? It's like worrying about all the things that could go wrong. It's like, well, what is the one thing, in the one step that I can make today that moves everything else forward? So that's a really positive message that really resonated.
Yeah. There's another line that I often use. A friend of mine says this to me all the time, and it's find the others. Because I think when we're focusing on what we can do today and, you know, or trying to do the thing, it's so hard to do it alone. And it's so hard to remain optimistic and hopeful and motivated when you're alone. So I think a huge part of this and a huge part of having hope is to find the others. Whoever they are, whatever that means, but just to not do it alone.
Find the others, yeah. Well, that actually is a beautiful segue into the next question. So you've started a successful organization, youth-led organization on the South Coast. What advice can you give to other people who want to maybe start their own organization or have some sort of impact foundation or charity or organization?
This is a great question. My answer is very simple, and it's to listen first. I think anyone coming to this area, or anyone, even if you come up in this area, there's no way of knowing everyone's experience. There's no way of knowing that what you're trying to do is going to resonate with everyone unless you find out first. That's been probably my biggest lesson through all of Sonder, is that none of us will ever have all the right answers. And if you're trying to create something, the best thing that we can do to have the greatest impact is to ask first and listen to the answers and then shape something around that.
I mean, it's a little bit like what we're doing, the purpose of this podcast too. And when we launched Nowra.org.au, like, we were a team of five businesses from the area who all got together and were part of this program from the state government. But we didn't think that us five were enough to represent the collective voice. And so we had 100 members sign up in the first few weeks. And the first thing those members did was complete a survey. And so now, as a team, with those 100 voices, that's how we're figuring out, you know, which direction to move this Nowra brand in.
Yeah,
and then this podcast as well, it's like, we're also listening, you know, what is what are the stories of people who have been successful here, and, you know, we're also sharing those stories to help to change the narrative as well. So I think that's really great advice, and I think, like, you can jump into an idea with the best of intentions and think that, oh, I've got to, you know, this is a brilliant idea and everyone's going to love it, but if you don't have a few people who are, like, either going to buy what you are selling or sign up for your program, like, maybe it's not the best to invest a whole lot of time and energy until you have, like, at least five people who are, like, keen to be involved.
Yeah, I love the idea of 100 people in a survey, because we so often exist in echo chambers. So I think part of listening and understanding is actually intentionally getting outside of those echo chambers and making sure that the feedback you're getting is not just from people are going to tell you whatever you do is great. You've got to, you know, it's almost, unless someone in the sphere is telling you you might have it wrong, you've probably not got the right people in the room.
And like, interestingly, what came out of those surveys, because a lot of our members of Nowra CBD businesses were safety and cleanliness, and that wasn't something necessarily that us as the core group of the district coordinators were really considering, like, where our businesses were located, we didn't have any safety issues and cleanliness wasn't an issue for us. And so that was a big, like, kind of mental shift that we've able to move our first thing. If people are going to be proud of Nowra, it's got to be safe and it's got to be clean. So those kind of things are were insights that came that I would have not considered myself, I guess.
What did you consider?
Good question. I think for us, like, my whole thing has been about rewriting the narrative, you know, and so, like, telling the good stories, which is what we're kind of doing in this podcast. But for the people and the businesses and who spend every single day in Nowra, for them to even have any of that pride, it was is cleanliness and safety. So, yeah, I think for me, like, I sometimes get upset when I hear Nowra getting a bad rap, you know, and not really having an understanding of what's actually going on, why it gets that bad rap. And so for me, it's like, well, how can I share all the cool stuff? And that's why, you know, getting people like yourself on and all the great guests we've had on this podcast is, like, their stories are the people who are going to help to change that narrative. So people see Nowra in a different light. Good question.
You need both the tangible and the intangible for this kind of change.
And it's a community-wide change. And I think also too, like, my other project, Be Here Nowra, is about teaching meditation, and that is about getting to the grassroots of basically stress in our nervous system. Once we can release stress in our nervous system, then people can show up better for the community, coming down from that bottom-down approach. And so, you know, we can't have a green forest without green trees. And I think Sonda's doing the same thing, is attacking youth well-being and creating those green trees so that our community can flourish. So, yeah, that seems like a lot of alignment.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, last few rapid-fire questions. What do you hope Nowra feels like in 10 years?
The word that comes to mind is robust. And I think that is informed by partially Black Summer. I would love to see a lot more connection between the different facets of our community. I think there's a lot of really strong communities within Nowra and the area that are still very separate and misunderstood. And so I think a robust community is one that is connected and communicates and can be prepared for all the things that will change in the coming years.
Yeah, adaptability is going to be so important, because, as you've so said before, is like, that change is happening and change is speeding up, and we can't affect what happens outside, but we can only affect how we react to that change.
Yeah, and I think that being robust and being adaptable requires people being on the front foot and stepping up to contribute to community and not being individualistic or self-protective, which is hard because it's scary and it feels safer to do those things. But in 10 years, I hope that people have valued community enough to step in rather than out.
Beautiful. Who is one Nowra person whose story you'd love to hear on this podcast?
Yeah, so I'm not sure who's already on here. I would love a young person. Obviously, that's my industry. I'm not sure what your child safety rules are, but an under 18 potentially. If not, Laura Heffel, who is now running for Me For You and was a participant and a volunteer and is just an incredible young woman. She grew up here and is one of the most inspiring people I know and would have, I think, an interesting take.
Great. Season two, we'll contact you. We can do both. Mm-hmm. We can get Laura.
Yep.
And we'll get someone under 18.
Cool. Awesome. I'll bring someone.
And then finally, any asks of the people of Nowra?
Yeah, I mean, I think my ask of the people in Nowra and people in general is to embrace discomfort, which I think is very alike the work you're doing, that when we're fearful of discomfort or trying to protect ourselves from discomfort, we become guarded and closed and judgmental, divisive. But if we are able to seek understanding and witness other people's perspectives, not as in conflict to ours, but in a way that is maybe an opportunity to learn, it can be uncomfortable. So I think we all would benefit from getting better at being uncomfortable.
Love that. Get uncomfortable. I'll leave you with a quote that I love personally, is that success can be defined by the number of uncomfortable conversations we're willing to have.
I love that.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thanks, Avalon. It's been
my
an absolute delight.
Thank you.
Look forward to seeing what Sonda does next.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Nowra.org.au podcast. I'm your host, Baron Hansen. We are recording in Triple U Studios in Nowra CBD. It's a community radio station. Our producer here is Paul Murphy. Nowra.org.au is funded by the New South Wales Government Uptown Accelerator Program. If you'd like more information, visit nowra.org.au. Or follow us on socials, subscribe to the mailing list. See you next time.